Okay, so last week we mentioned, as we went through, and it was actually so many fascinating, good morning. So last week we mentioned all that we said, I thought maybe we would skip, and thank God we didn't, and we saw some beautiful ideas about all the different karbanos that had to do with the different yom tovim, and it goes through, and it's good morning, and it's good, so good to see you. So this week we said that we were going to continue, and we had gone up through the year, as the year starts in the Torah from Pesach, and the last set of Yom Tov that we'll discuss is the Yom Tov of Sukkos. And it's going to tell us specifically, as we are doing, about the special karbanos, the special sacrifices that are brought on Sukkos. Now, Sukkos is unique, and we'll see in a minute. It's different to all the other Yom Tovim as far as the special karbanos. Sukkos has something which is unbelievable. And as I promised, we will see the special connection between Sukkos and Chanukah, which, of course, today is Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So what could be more incredibly bashert than learning about the connection between Sukkos and Chanukah today? So, in order to get to that, though, we have to see the psukim that talk about the Sukkos sacrifices. We'll see what is unique about Sukkos, and then we'll see how it's connected to Chanukah, and of course, what is so special about the Yom Tov of Chanukah, and how relevant, and we all know that, but even more than ever, Chanukah is to us at the present moment. What it means, and what the message that it gives us, and how it's able to lift us up and really give us a boost, even in the darkest of times. Okay, so if you look at in front of you, so you have two booklets. So the top booklet, the one with the psukim, I'd like you to go to page 362, because we've done the previous ones. Let's see on page 362. I want to do these last few psukim. So it says like this. It says, U'b'chamisha asar L'chaydesh, right? So on the 15th of L'chaydesh Ashri of the 7th month, which means the month of Tishrei, Mikra Chaydesh Yelachem, it will be a holy convocation for you. Kol Melechus Avoda Loisasu, you don't do any work. The next part, and it continues, V'chagoysem Chag L'Hashem Shivas Yomim, and you will celebrate a Yom Tov for Hashem for 7 days. We'll see in a minute. Sukkos is 7 days, but we know we have an extra day, the day of Shemini Atzeret. So we'll see in a minute. But before we get to that, just if you look at the Rashi, let me just see something. Rashi, no, I don't want to do the Rashi different. Let's continue to some of the psukim and we'll go back. Okay, so we're now on page 363. If you look, I'm just going to read a few of the psukim because I just want to show you something with the special sacrifices. V'hikraftem oila isha reyach nichayach l'Hashem. So you will bring up as an oila offering. What are you going to bring up? So it says, parim bnei bakar shloisha asar. So you're going to bring up 13 young bulls, eilim shnayim, how does it say, 2 rams, kvasim bnei shana arba asar tzmimim yihiyu, and 14 male lambs in their first year. Now it sounds, what's the difference how many? But I just want to show you something. On the other Yomim Tovim, specifically Pesach, which is 7 days also, you actually bring the same carbon every single day. Sukkos and Shavuos, which is really only one day in the Torah, well, obviously it's the same carbon because it's only one day. Sukkos being 7/8 days, we will see that the carbon changes. And that's very, very unique. What do I mean by the carbon changes? The number of animals for some of the carbonists will actually change every single day. And you can even see on the bottom of page 363, there's a little chart. I'm going to show you. It's very clear there. Look. So it shows you. It shows you on the bottom there. It says, the first day, how many bulls? 13. The second day, 12 bulls. The third day, 11 bulls. The fourth day, 10. You see, every day you decrease the number of bulls. And on the seventh day, you bring 7. The total number will be 70. Now, as far as lambs, that's the same every day. Do you see? 14 lambs every single day. And in total, making 98, right? That's, is that what it says? 98. Okay, I want to show you something. Now, go back to the Rashi. That I want. It's just fascinating to understand. Everything is very significant. This is not just a number pulled out of the hat. So we see a decrease in the bulls, B, that it adds up to 70. With the lambs, it's the same every day, adding up to 98. So if you look, I'm sorry to make you miss it, go back to page 362, the Rashi, I'll show you. So it says, Pare hachag shivim hein. The bulls of the Sukkot festival are 70. Why? Keneged shivim umais, corresponding to the 70 nations. Interesting. It's our Yom Tif. We go to the Beis HaMikdash, right, with the Jewish people. It's not the time that the non-Jews come to the Beis HaMikdash, it's the time that the Jewish people come. Non-Jews were also permitted to come, just by the way, to the Holy Temple, and they did. But Sukkot is our Yom Tif. So what are we talking about here? Why are we bringing a total of 70 bulls, which correspond to the 70 nations, on Sukkot? So look what he says. He says, not only, a fascinating thing, they also, umismatim v'holchim, and they progressively decrease in number. As we saw, each day fewer bulls are brought than the day before. What is this? So he says, siman kliyahu lahem. It's a sign of annihilation for the nations, meaning that the nations are not eternal. Ubimei hamikdash, and in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, Hayu meganin aleihem. These special karbanos that they would bring in the Beis HaMikdash would actually protect the nations, min hayisurim, from punishments. Fascinating double-edged sword here. We're bringing these sacrifices, in a sense, almost not in honor, but actually to be able to, if you want to say, activate brachas and everything that they need for the nations of the world. Because we know that the Beis HaMikdash was the source of the sustenance, not just for the Jewish people, but for the entire world. So on Sukkot, we say we don't just remember ourselves, we remember everybody. So all of the brachas that the nations of the world receive, it is in the merit of the bulls that the Jewish people bring as sacrifices on those 7 days of Sukkot. So fascinating, the Gemara actually says, I'm just looking if it says it here, it doesn't say it over here, it says, if the nations of the world would only know how much blessing they receive from the Beis HaMikdash, they would have surrounded the Beis HaMikdash as a fortress and protected it, never mind caused it, definitely not caused it to be destroyed. As we say, the same thing, it's also eternal now. The blessings of the whole world come through Jerusalem. And if they would only know, they would protect Jerusalem. They would protect the integrity that the Jewish people should be able to daven for the peace and for the well-being of the whole world. Unfortunately, they don't know. For some, they don't want to know, right? They know, but they don't want to know. So that's what happens. And instead of protecting, they annihilate. But you do see something else interesting, though, that it does decrease in number. So this is a fascinating thing, and we're going to discuss it later. We'll hold on to it for later. It is brachas for the nations of the world, but the nations of the world do have to acknowledge that the brachas come through our praying for them in Jerusalem. So this is the decrease in number, that they have to realize that they're reliant on Hashem, right? They're not, you know, they're not, so to speak, self-sustained. They are also reliant upon the bracha. Therefore, they have to realize that. So that's one thing that we see. Now, we saw another number. We're going to get into this more in depth soon, but just first we want to see how the first pasuk says. Then it says like this. But the sheep, as we mentioned, it says the sheep correspond to the Jewish people because the Jewish people are called a Seb Surah Yisrael. They are a scattered lamb. And they, we said, is the same every single day. The same amount of sheep every single day. Why? And it says, and what's the total? Minyanam Tishim Mishmaina. The total of sheep offered on Sukkot is 98. Lechalais Bahem, to eradicate from Israel, Tishim Ushmaina Klalais. The 98 curses, which are written, as it says in the Mishnah Torah, which means at the end of Chumash Devarim. At the end of Chumash Devarim, in Parashas Kisavai, do you remember when the Jewish people were on the two mountains, and on one mountain, Moshe Rabbeinu would turn, and half the tribes were on one, and Moshe Rabbeinu gave beautiful blessings, and on the other side were the Jewish people, half of them, and there was all the curses if we don't follow the Torah. altogether 98 very harsh curses that we don't want to study them now, and it should never happen, but a lot of them, last year was felt very relevant. A lot of them took place over just even the last year, but definitely throughout the Jewish history, we unfortunately experienced a lot of the negative things. But these sheep that were brought on Sukkot specifically were there to protect us, that we shouldn't, chas v'shalom, be punished with those 98 curses. So you see a very beautiful thing, that this is really a tremendous source of protection, of bracha, all of the different karbanos throughout the 7 days of Sukkot. But one thing to remember, in the 7 days of Sukkot, we do bring in the nations of the world. It's not exclusive for the Jewish people. Okay, now, as we said, Sukkot is not 7 days. Sukkot is 8 days, and here nine, right, with Simchas Torah. But in Israel, 8 days, we have what we call Shmini Atzeres. So let's see what it says. It's Tzon Yom Tov. So going back up to the Psukim, I'll show you where. Let us go now to page, let me see which page it is, 300 and, let me see, because each day, oh, yeah, three on the next page, 365. If you go down to Pasuk Lamed Hei, right, so we are in Perek Chavtes, now Pasuk Lamed Hei, verse 35 on the bottom, it says, by Yom Hashmini Atzeres, on the eighth day. And what is Atzeres? It shall be a restraining. It's a holding back. That's what Atzeres means, a holding back for you. And it tells us, Kol Melechas Avayda Lo Sasu, that you don't do work. So it's a day of Yom Tov, as we know, just like the first day of Sukkot. And what will you bring on that day? So on page 366, so you will bring also as an oila offering, look what it says here, par echad, one bull, right? So we're forgetting all the nations now, right? You saw not the 12, 13, 12, 11, finished at 7. No, now one bull, ayil echad, one ram, Kvasim b'nei shana, shivat mimim. Okay, so the seven male lambs. Okay, why are we bringing one bull and one ram? What is this concept? So let's see what Rashi tells us. I just want to show you before we go around. Now we have to go, back the page before, because first I want to show you what does atzeres mean. It's a funny word. We know we just use it. We say the Yom Tov is called Shmini Atzeres. It's interesting because in the Torah, the Yom Tov of Shavuos is also called Atzeres. It's interesting. Yeah, it's fascinating. And Shmini Atzeres is also called Atzeres. What is it? So if you go to the previous page, Rashi on 35, it says Atzeres Tiyalochem. What is Atzeres? A restraining. So on a simple level, Atzurim b'mayt basiyas malacha. You shall be restrained with respect to doing work. Because you remember on Sukkot, there are the intermediate days, those days of Chol HaMayid, those days we're permitted to work. Comes the last day of Sukkot, and we say, oh, you got to stop working again. So that's one meaning, just that you have to hold back from working again. Then it says, Rashi says, Dover Acher, another explanation, Atzeres Itzru Militzes, restrain yourselves from departing. Which means, melamed sheta'un lina, that the eighth day requires spending the night in Jerusalem. What does this mean? What do you mean spending the night in Jerusalem? The truth is that for many of the Yom Tov days, the Jews would spend the night in Jerusalem. As we know, that was the whole idea of Aliyah L'Regel, to go up, you know, as we know. Why are we specifying over here, spending the night in Jerusalem? So I'm going to show you what Rashi brings, a medrash, a beautiful, beautiful medrash. And it's an analogy. And it says like this, Lefisha kol yimais haregel, because on all the days of the festival, hikrivu keneget shivim umais, they brought offerings corresponding to the 70 nations. Ukisha ba'in laleches, and when they were about to leave, right? So comes the end of Sukkot. They're about to go home. Omar lahem hamakim, Hashem says to them, and now we go to the next page. What does he say? Bibakosha mikem, I request from you, Osu li seuda ketana, make for me a small feast. Why? Kidei she'ehana mikem, so that I may have pleasure from you. What's the small feast? One bull, one ram. And these, the one, correspond, Keneged Yisrael, to the Jewish people. Shehein Echad LaHakadosh Baruch Hu, who are like the unique one, the one, you know, like the only child to Hashem. What is the idea? And here he continues, the Medrash tells us, what does this mean? I mean, we've been spending so long already in Jerusalem. We were there already 7 days. What's this eighth day? I think we can all relate to this. Somebody comes to visit a special family member. And what happens if you have, especially, I think you can relate to it if you have a simcha, and many people come, right? But then you have, you know, the one child that came from far away. What do you say to them? So look what the Rashi tells us, the Medrash says, gives an analogy. He says, his akfu li ma'at oi, just stay, linger for a little bit more. What does it mean, he says? V'loshen chiba huzeh. It's an expression of endearment, of love. Kibonim haniftarim me'aviem, like children who take leave from their father. And what does the father say to them? V'oimer lohem, Koshe alai predaschem. This is a very famous, beautiful line. The father says, your departure is difficult for me. Koshe alai predaschem. Predaschem means the separation. It's difficult when they have to go back. We all know, we look so much forward to when they come, but then they have to leave. And he says, that's why the father says, ikfu oidi aymechot, stay one more day. And the Medrash gives a mashal, mashal lemelech, Sha'asa suda v'chulu. So Rashi doesn't bring the whole Medrash, but it says like this, that the Medrash tells us that a king made a big feast, and there are many guests. You know, like we say, we make a wedding, many people come. But there's the one dear special friend of the king, the one that's really unique and special. So the king says to him, wait just one extra day that you and me can spend alone. Let us have some our time together. The rest of the time we were sharing with everybody else. One more day. This is what Shmini Atzeres is. That's one of the most special days in the calendar that they chose to take us and to destroy, whatever. But anyways, it is really, people don't, that's what, and in our, okay, so for us it's 2 days, but it's the day that we, us and Hashem, really are, so to speak. That's why it's such a happy day. It's just us and Hashem. And this is represented by the one cow, the one bull, right? The one ram. It's one, just us and Hashem. And the word that's used is fascinating. The line that the Medrash says is, Koshe alai predaschem. It is difficult for me, the separation. But if you look at the word predaschem, Jacuzzi, what does predaschem mean? Your separation. It should say, predaseinu, our separation. But it doesn't. It says, your separation. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe explains so beautifully. He says, what is really worrying Hashem is that when we go away physically from the Yontif that we were all spending together, even nowadays, you know, Yontif is such a beautiful time. You come to shul every day, you see everybody. There's a sense of unity. What is Hashem worried about? Exactly. You're going to separate each from each other. Mm-hmm. Worried about the disunity amongst the Jewish people themselves. The separation, that feeling of aloneness that each Jew will have when they go to their own home. That's why Hashem says, one more day. And when we do one more day, how does that help? You cement the connection. It's a day that we have to really concentrate just on the fact that we are one Jewish people. It brought home to us very strongly. We have nobody else, we have nothing else, but we have each other. And therefore, when Hashem says, Kasha, Laitre Daschem, what he's saying is, make sure that when you do go to your, you know, homes, and you are not together physically,
like
when
the children immigrate.
And that's it. But we can't separate spiritually. We have to remain with one heart. And that's really what it's about. So that's what Shmini Atzeres is. It's an incredibly special yontif. And you can see it's brought out through the special sacrifices. That's what's amazing. It's absolutely amazing how the karbanos represent the spirit of what the yontif is. But it's, as we can see also, all the other days, we're concentrating on Hashem giving, you know, the resources to the whole world. And here, it's more about our special connection to Hashem. Okay, just want to show you one or two more. Oh, Rashi has a cute other explanation. This is just a small thing, just very cute. Look what he says. He says, Medrash Rabbi Tanchuma, so another Medrash. He says, the Torah teaches us proper conduct. Shemi sheyesh lo achsanya, somebody who has a lodger. Okay, a guest comes. Yayim rishon yechilenu ptuma. The first day you give him fattened poultry, you know, the fanciest food. The next day you give him fish. The next day meat, he says, of animals. The next day legumes. The next day vegetables. Like years ago. But what's the idea? So you might think, oh, you're just like treating him not nicely. No. Actually, it's a beautiful thing the Medrash tells us. What's the idea? The longer he spends with you, the more he becomes part of the family. Mm-hmm. It's not a guest that you have to put on a whole show. Mm-hmm. He's just going to eat what you eat, the normal food. And that's actually quite beautiful in a sense. So he actually says that this is the way we do it. So in a sense, the longer we spend with Hashem, in a way, the more familiar we are. And Hashem doesn't need all the extra, so to speak. He needs us, who we really are, as we are. And that's what Hashem wants. So it's quite a beautiful, just a very nice, acute other way of looking at it. This is also what Shmini Atzeres is. In a certain sense, fascinatingly, you know, when we celebrate Shmini Atzeres, there really isn't a special mitzvah of the day. You know, the other days we have the Lulav and Esrog, and on Shmini Atzeres we don't. So you see, it's interesting. It's just us and Hashem without that special mitzvah, just the normal mitzvahs that we do every day. You know, it's a fascinating idea. So that's the way this is explained. And I just want to show you, just read you the last two psukim. It says, awesome. Sure, Sylvia.
What is that? Is that to pursue?
Oh, so I know you're thinking, lefrod is to separate.
To separate.
I know lirdof is...
You've just changed the word.
Lirdof. As I said, lirdof is to run after, to chase. Yes, exactly. Preda or lifrod is to separate. Exactly. That's right. There you go. Good. Now it's a good question. This is the language. It's the most magnificent language. And yeah. Okay. That's for sure. That's for sure. Okay. Let's see. I just wanted to see if we do maybe just do the last pasuk of the parsha, and then we're going to finish. It says, I'll read the last two pasukim, because then we're going to be finished. And he says, okay, let me see. Eila tasu, you see pasuk lamites. Eila tasu l'Hashem, these shall you make for Hashem. Let me go to the last page, 367, b'mayadeichem, on your appointed festivals, levad mi nidreichem, aside from your vows. See what he's saying? That all these sacrifices are the prescribed ones that we have to bring no matter what. But then there's also specific sacrifices that Jews might come, because it's an opportunity. You're coming to the Beis HaMikdash, and you might have vowed and said, one day, one Monday morning, when something good happened, or something you were afraid of, or whatever it may be, you might have made a vow and said, I promise I'm going to give this and this korban, right? So when are you going to do it? The opportunity is when you go up to Jerusalem. So that's what it says. So this is an opportunity, a good time, to do all of the, fulfill all your vows, v'nid v'seichem, and your free will offerings, l'aylei seichem, for your oil offering, l'lumin chayseichem, and for your meal offerings, v'l'niskeyem, v'shalmeichem, and for your libations, and for your peace offerings. V'yayimer Meishel b'nei Yisrael, and Meishel Rabbeinu told the Jewish people, k'chol atsher tziva Hashem es Meishel, exactly as Hashem had commanded Moshe. So he passes on all of the information to the Jewish people. Very quickly, do you see in the Rashi, levad min nidreichem, aside from your vows. The reason we're reading this Rashi is because this leads us to the next parsha, which we will not start today. Maybe, I think probably next term. It is the parsha Matis, which talks about vows, about when a person takes a vow and how you're actually can annul a vow, okay? But that's why it leads on to that. And some vows are, in those times, were certain sacrifices. Nowadays, a person might make a vow that I'm going to give a certain amount of money to tzedakah, or I'm going to help a certain person, or I'm going to do an extra mitzvah, whatever it may be. But in those days, a lot of the vows involved the giving of a korban that they would bring to the Beis HaMikdash. So he's saying over here, aside from your vows, in Bosem, Lidar Karbanis, if you come to pledge offerings, Baregel, on the festival, Mitzvah Hibi Yadchem, it's a commandment in your hand, so you have fulfilled the commandment, Ayn nedarim, ayn nedavais, or vows, or free will offerings. Shenadartem kol hashana. Sometimes you might pledge it on the Yom Tov. Sometimes you might have pledged it during the entire year. So it says, takrivum baregel, offer them on the festival. Why? Shema yikshalot, lest it be difficult for him. Lachsar v'lalais l'Yerushalayim, to ascend again to Jerusalem. V'lahakriv nedarim, and to offer the sacrifices pledged for his vows. V'nimtza oiver b'bal ta'acher. It would come that he is violating, you shall not be late. In other words, sometimes a person goes up to Jerusalem, becomes very, very inspired while they're there, makes a vow, says, oh, I want to bring a special karban. So the pasuk is telling us, don't wait, do it right away while you're there. Don't postpone it, because you never know, you might end up postponing it a little bit too much. This is obviously a very important lesson for all of us. We know it happens on Yom Tov, it happens on Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, any special time. We get inspired, we experience something special. And when we're inspired, a lot of times we take upon us, we say, I'll do this extra thing. Whatever it may be. I'll daven this, or I'll do this mitzvah. So the Torah is telling us, don't delay it. If you were inspired and you made a promise, make sure to fulfill it as soon as you possibly can. Because human nature is, things do get, you know, the inspiration wears off a bit, and we forget. So that's just an important lesson in and of itself. And then at the end, why does it tell us, I think I'm going to leave that. We're going to actually do that when we come to the next parsha, because it really connects to the next parsha. Now, before, I just want to come back now, as we were talking, to understand the specialness of this Yom Tov of Sukkot with these cows, the going down, and the what's happening. So, if you look at your booklets, I'm going to show you something. The other booklet, I think, is it on the front? Do you have a piece of Gemara? Is that the front one? Yeah. Okay, I want to show you something nice. I didn't have it over here, so I'm just going to... Here. Okay. So it says, is it 21b2? Yeah, that's what you have. Yeah, beautiful. Let me show you something. This, you can see, is from Gemara Shabbos, but this is the Gemara that talks about Chanukah. Okay, so let's hear some of the Gemara talks about Hanukkah. And it's going to tell us about how we light the Hanukkah candles. And I'll show you something that's a very famous piece, but to see a very nice thing. So it says like this. The Gemara, see it on the first column, the Gemara prescribes various levels of performing the mitzvah of kindling the Hanukkah lights. So, Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught us in a braisa. Mitzvahs Hanukkah, the mitzvah of Hanukkah. Ner Ishu Besa is one light each night for a man and his entire household. Right? We know that's the famous thing, the basic, right? That if you light one candle every night of Hanukkah for every member of the household, just one, you fulfill the mitzvah in the basic form. But we don't do that. We all know that's not how we light Hanukkah. Let's see what it continues. V'hamahadrin, and those who pursue mitzvahs, meaning those who do it a little bit better. How do we do it? Have ner l'chol echad ve'echad, one light each night for each and every one in their household. Right, that's the better way to do it, as we say mahadrin. And then we have a third thing. We go an extra layer. Hamahadrin min hamahadrin. For those who are even more, for like even better, you know. Usually we are not everybody does mitzvahs like that, you know. But Hanukkah, everybody keeps the most. And what is the most? So let's see. This over here, we have a famous difference of opinion. This is one of the most famous differences between, we know them as Shammai and Hillel, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, right? The most famous argument. What is it? So it says like this. Beis Shammai Aimrim. So Beis Shammai says, Rishayin Madlik Shmaina. On the first day you light 8, right? As we say. And then what happens? Mikan ve'eilech pachais ve'eilech. And then you decrease. That's Beis Shammai's way, right? 8, 7. We can't even imagine it because nobody does that. 8, 7, 6. Imagine on the last night of Hanukkah there would only be
one.
The first night would be 8, the last night would be only 1. Such an interesting thing. This is Beis Shammai's view. Okay, let's see. And then we continue and we say, Ubeis Hillel Aimrin, Yain Rishayin Madlik Achas. The first day, one kindles one light. Mikan ve'eilech, Maisif v'haylech. That's what we do, right? And every single day, we increase on that amount. Now, it's all very nice to have an argument, but what's the logic? What's motivating Beis Shammai to give that idea of going from 8 to 1? And what's motivating Beis Hillel, Hillel himself, to say this, right? Let's see what he says. So Amar Ullah, so Ullah explains. So now they're explaining what's the difference. So he says, Pligibad tre amirai b'ma'arava, two amirayim in the West disagree about the interpretation of this Tanaic dispute. So there's two different ways of understanding why we might go from 1 to 8 or 8 to 1. So Rabbi Yosi bar Abin and Rabbi Yosi bar Zvida. Okay, so they're both named Rabbi Yosi, but different fathers. Okay, he says like this: Chad Omar Taima de Beis Shammai. One of them says that Beis Shammai's reason for for the decrease from 8 to 1, is Kineged Yomim Hanichnos. And we're not going to go into this one in depth. This is a fascinating idea. He says is so that the various kindlings correspond to the number of days yet to come. Okay? What does that mean, yet to come? Well, on the eighth, on the first night of Hanukkah, how many nights are left?
Seven.
Well, including that night, there's eight, right? As we said, on the seventh, so that's why he says. So on the last night, there's only one. That's why you light one candle. You understand? It's a very strange logic to us, but that's Beis Shammai's view. It's the concept of actually potential. It's what's potentially left. Okay? What's the potential? The potential is that there is another eight. At the last night, there's only one. That's Beis Shammai. Let's see what Hillel... And this is one. And then he says, and what is Hillel's view? Kineged Yomim Hanichnosim. Time of the Beis Hillel. What's Beis Hillel's view? We say Kineged Yomim Hayotzim, corresponding to the number of days already passed, right? So that's how many days? On the eighth night of Hanukkah, we have 8 nights of Hanukkah already passed. That's the actuality. Beis Hillel believes in the practical, what's really here in front of you. So we've already celebrated, we've activated 8. That's why on the last night, we have 8. On the first night, we only have 1. We haven't had the others yet. Okay, like I said, that's its own discussion. What I want to come to is the next one. Then they explain, the other Rabbi Yosi explains the dispute from a different point. And this is where we're going to get what connects to our Chumash that we did. Okay, let's see. So he says, V'chad amar, taima de Beis Shammai. And one of them says that the Beis Shammai's reason of making it decrease from 8 to 1, Kineged Parei HaChag, is corresponding, this is, sounds so strange, to the bull sacrifices of the Sukkot festival. Do you remember? How did it go?
Yes.
We went down. 14, 13, whatever, 13, 12, 11, 10, down. That's what Beis Shammai says. Just like Sukkot you go down, so too on Hanukkah you go down. What's the connection? Okay, in a minute. So what is Beis Hillel? What's his logic? Why do we go up? So it says, V'taima de Beis Hillel, de mailin ba'kaydesh v'ein mayridin. There's a principle that in holiness, you only increase, you never go down, right? We know this is why sometimes we have to be very careful when we take upon ourselves something. We know that you should be careful because we don't decrease. Holiness goes up. And there's actually a fascinating concept that says that really, Beis Hillel also agrees with Beis Shammai. He also says that the Hanukkah lights are very connected to Sukkot and to the cows of the Yontif. The problem is, we can't go down, because in holiness, you don't go down. Okay, you understand? So it's very interesting. According to most opinions, both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel say that there is something about Hanukkah that is so connected to Sukkot, and specifically, as we see, to these cows of Sukkot. So what is it? What's happening here? So this is what we have to understand. This is a fascinating, fascinating idea. Okay, so I'm just going to share with you a few things orally, and then we're going to go inside to a beautiful Hasidic explanation. Many, many different explanations, and absolutely beautiful. So even, just before we go inside, maybe you can tell me, putting aside specifically the cows, how and why would we maybe say that there is? What do you see about Hanukkah and Sukkot that are similar? Based on what we just said, how many days is Sukkot, as we read now? Well, Sukkot is technically 7, but really there is the 8th day, right? Shmini Atzeres, right? That's unique. Pesach is 7 days. So 8 days of Sukkot, 8 days of Hanukkah, right? That's one thing. A few similarities. You can help me think. What else? What do we do on every Yom Tov? Today we also said it. Which special tefillah do we say? Today we only said half Hallel. Exactly. So, I don't know if you know, but on Pesach, we say the whole Hallel only the first 2 days. Exactly. Not the rest. What do we do on Sukkot? The entire 8 days, we say the whole Hallel. What do we do on Hanukkah? The entire 8 days, we say the whole Hallel. Okay. Sounds a bit random, but yeah, we get. Just think a little bit more. Think about, what do we do? When do we light the Hanukkah candles? This is a little bit of a deeper concept. What time of day do we light the Hanukkah candles? In the evening, right? What's the evening? What's happening in the evening? So to speak, how do we have evening? Because what do we have less of? Less of the, exactly. So we have less of the sun and more of the darkness. What does it say about the sukkah? How do you make a sukkah? What's the main part of the sukkah? The schach. What does it say about the schach?
You have to see the stars.
Exactly. You have to have more shade than sunlight. That's what it says. That's the words that's used. More shade than sun. Exactly.
The end of Yom Kippur.
It is. You start on Yom Kippur, but more shade than dark. That, right? Same idea. Misha tishka hachama. That's when you light the Hanukkah candles, as the sun is setting. So more, so to speak, in a sense, shade than light. Right? That's the Sukkot and Hanukkah. Fascinating. Interesting that we don't think about so yeah. I know, we don't think about it that way. It seems such a different Yom Tov. So, yeah, very, very different. So let me just share with you also something historical. It says something very fascinating. That during the time of the actual Hanukkah story, we all know there was terrible persecution going on by the, you know, Antiochus, whatever, the Greek army, the, you know, the Syrian army that was there ruling over the Jewish people. We know, fascinatingly, about Hanukkah, it's a bit of a unique Yom Tov, is that they really wanted to capture our souls more than our bodies, as we say, because at that time they gave the Jews the opportunity. They said, if you want to become Hellenists, or if you want to become Greek, you know, Greekicized, whatever you want to say, and take on our way, our approach to the world, that's fine, we'll leave you. But if you want to maintain your connection to Hashem, that's a problem, right? That was their problem. So it says, actually what happened that year, the year of the Hanukkah story, before Matisyahu took up his arms with his sons and, you know, and had the fight and stood up against the enemy, we had the Yom Tov of Sukkot, right? At that point, the Greeks had entered the Beis HaMikdash. We all know that, right? And what had they done? They had defiled the Beis HaMikdash. The Jewish people that year were unable to celebrate Sukkot properly. They weren't able to bring the sacrifices in the Beis HaMikdash. They weren't able to do the whole Yom Tov properly. So when it came to Hanukkah, it says, what they did was, they said, we have to make up the Sukkot Yom Tov. And that's what Beis Shammai is saying. We have to make up what we lost on Sukkot. And one of the most interesting things is, as we mentioned before in the Medrash, if they would only know, that on Sukkot is the time we actually daven for the nations of the world. But they prevented us from doing that. Came Hanukkah, and we said, you know what? We're going to do the Hanukkah candles according to Beis Shammai, corresponding to those cows. In other words, we are going to try and generate an energy of light. We're going down, but the idea being, bringing the sustenance, bringing the godliness, bringing the brachas back into the world that we were stopped from being able to bring on Sukkot of that year. So that's another fascinating thing. It's actually absolutely incredible to understand. Let me just say, there's a few other beautiful ones before we go into drop more of the meaning. Okay, yes, let me just see. Yes, an additional. Oh, it's actually interesting. The Medrash says that the Greeks issued a decree, actually, forbidding the Jews to observe the Sukkot festival. And so they were unable to bring, as we said, these karbanis. So therefore Hashem said, you wanted to abolish the 8 days of Sukkot. I will give them an additional festival that will have 8 days. So it's another way of, another understanding that Hashem actually gave us Hanukkah as a special Yom Tov, an extra Yom Tov, because the Greeks, the Syrians, tried to hold us back from being able to keep the Sukkot Yom Tov. Another interesting thing it says is that, fascinating thing it says that in Chumash Vayikra, not in our Pesukim, but in Chumash Vayikra, it also talks about the special sacrifices of the Yontif. And right after it finishes the Yontif of Sukkis, it mentions that you have to bring up the oil for the Menorah. So there is a direct, that's like a hint in the Chumash between Sukkis and Chanukah. So it's just a fascinating thing that it mentions, the Baal HaTorah actually mentions there. Then we have another beautiful one. You know, we mentioned this. We mentioned that the Yamim Tovim correspond to the three fathers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, right? So there's a difference of opinion exactly how you do Shavuot, but most of them, we said, Avraham, it's Pesach, as we said, the matzah, right? He told them to make matzah for the guests. And we have Yitzchak is the shofar that they blew at Har Sinai, because that was the ram of Yitzchak. The ram that they brought instead of Yitzchak had two, as we said, the two horns. One was for the Matan Torah, one is for the time of Mashiach. And Yaakov, we said last time, the Pasuk actually says, I think it's the next week's parasha. It's in Vayishlach, I think. It says, Yaakov journeyed to Sukkis, that's what it says, the place called Sukkis, and he built himself a house. And for his livestock, he made shelters, and he therefore called the name of the place Sukkis. So Yaakov is corresponding to the Yontif of Sukkis. It says the name Yaakov has the gematria, the numerical value, of 182. And it's interesting, it says that Sukkis has 182 sacrifices. If you add up, right, as we said, the 70 and the 98 all together, and the other ones, because remember we mentioned a few others, it comes to 182 sacrifices. That's Yaakov, that has to do with Sukkis. But what does it have to do with Chanukah? So we all know, what is the Yontif of Chanukah? We celebrate the finding of the oil, that little jug of untainted oil. And we all know, what is the oil of the Jewish people? The oil and the light of the Jewish people is Torah. That's what Yaakov represents, the learning of Torah. That's what we said, Yaakov sat in the tents and he learned Torah. So Yaakov is connected to Sukkis, which is connected specifically to Chanukah, to the concept of the learning of Torah. But even more, it's very interesting, it says that another way to explain it, it's a very cute thing. In the Pasuk, when it talks about Yaakov traveling to the place called Sukkis, it says, the Yaakov nasa sukkaisa, he traveled to Sukkis, vayivin loy bayis, and he built for himself a house. That, right, so he built himself a house, and he built for his cattle. It says also places to put, and he said like this. What does it say? The Zohar says like this, that when it says Yaakov traveled to Sukkis, that's a hint that he kept Sukkis. But then it says, Vayiven loy bayis. What is the word loy? Loy is for himself, which is lamid vav, which is 36. And it's a very interesting thing. It says that, what does it say about the Chanukah candles? It says that we have to put them al pesach beisoy, uses the word house, at the entrance to your home, mibachutz, so to speak, facing outward. How many candles do we light all together on Chanukah, if you don't count the shamash?
36.
Exactly, 36. Vayiven loy, so he built for himself loy, a bayis, which means a house that he can actually bring up the Chanukah candles, that he can light them. I mean, obviously, Yaakov didn't light Chanukah candles in the physical world. But spiritually, this is a hint that Yaakov had Sukkis and Chanukah, and they are connected. So it's very, just interesting how it, all these different ways that we have. Even Haggai has a prophecy, but I'm just going to see if there was one more here. Okay. Oh, and then this is a sad story, but I was looking, we didn't have the Gemara, but at the end of Gemara Sukkis, so talk about Sukkis, the last page of the Gemara called Gemara Sukkis, there's a whole story about a woman called Miriam Bas Bilga. So this is a very sad story that it was in the time of the Chanukah story. And unfortunately, as we know, as I said, there was a lot of persecution going on for the Jewish people, especially the Jews, and many of the Jews who tried to keep to their faith. And they were killed in horrible ways. So this girl was disillusioned, and she married a Greek officer. She married a high-ranking officer. She deserted her people. She rebelled. When they entered into the Beis HaMikdash to defile it, she went along with her husband. And the story goes, it's a very sad story, that she comes to the Mizbeach. She takes off her sandal. This is how the story goes. Let me see if I have it here. Exactly. It says like this. She takes off her sandal. It says Miriam takes it, and she screams and she hits the Mizbeach with her shoe. And she uses the words in the Gemara, the language is lukus, lukus. Wolf, wolf. She calls the Mizbeach a wolf. And she says, how long will you consume the money of Israel and do not stand by them in a time of pressing need? A very, very painful cry. What she's saying is, you took all the karbanis, right? You accept the karbanis, and then you don't defend the Jewish people. Why aren't you defending? She was one of the ones who deserted, and yet, well, the Rebbe explains so beautifully, you can see the neshama of a Jew, no matter how far they go, at the end of the day, when they're faced with the pain and the suffering of their people, it hurts very deeply. And she's angry. Okay, obviously she acted in a very terrible way. And what the Gemara describes and why it mentions it, it describes actually that her family, because she was one of the families of the Kohanim. It's terrible. And they had like a, as we mentioned last year, Mishmar. They were one of the designated families that would come up for 1 week of the year. And it says that they had, unfortunately, because of her disgrace that she did, they had certain things that they did that actually caused them shame later on. There were certain things that in their week, whatever it is. But what we see is something interesting, that the end of the Gemara Sukkah is a story about Hanukkah that took place at the Hanukkah time. Again, a fascinating connection between Sukkot and Hanukkah. But what's the real meaning? What is the connection of, as we started to say a little bit? So we led on a little bit with some of what we said before. So if you look, I'm just going to tell you a very nice idea. If you look into your sheets that you had before, that comes next in your on your booklet, I'm not going to do it, I feel bad, we don't have time to do it all inside. But I think that your next one has a Dalit circled, is that right? After the Gemara? Look, and then there's a Gemara. I'm sorry, I think there, yeah, continue. Then continue one more after that.
Yeah,
yeah, you see that one that has a Dalit circled? Yeah, there, that's it. Okay, beautiful. I want to show you something. I'll just read you a little bit inside and I'll show you what the meaning of this is. So he says, V'hine inyan ha'ashtachava l'chama v'kaychava mazales yeshne gam kein ba'avayda ha'ruchmiyas. Okay, so we said that when it comes to the sukkah, what do? We take a little bit of the sun away, right? Because we put the schach, so we block the sun, right? That's what we're doing. We're blocking the rays of the sun, and what we have is shade. We do have to allow a little bit of the stars to come in, right? That's what it says. You can't have that much schach that you don't see the stars. But the sunlight is not meant to be coming, streaming in. That means you don't have enough schach, right? So enough schach, blocking the sun. What's the idea of blocking the sun? So what does it represent? It says, bowing down to the sun represents, it says spiritually, v'hu inyan hatirda v'hashikua b'inyonei parnosa shemachnis es roishai v'sichloi bazeh. When a person immerses their whole head into what? Into the pursuit of the physical, of the material, of their livelihood. What do we mean by that? So there's two things we mean here. One thing is attributing the fact that it is me that is able to bring about the success of my livelihood, and we don't realize that it's all up to Hashem. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and it goes together, when we immerse ourselves so much in the materialism that we forget what's the point of it, what we're meant to be doing with it, right? The reason that we have the money is so we can buy the food for Shabbos, so that we can have a beautiful home to invite guests in. We forget, and instead we become so trapped in the materialism for itself, not for a higher purpose, not for a higher sake. This is when you worship the sun. That's what it is. So it says a beautiful thing. It says Sukkot, and we all know this. What do we do on Sukkot? Sukkot, we leave our home, right? And what's the idea? We say the security that the home provides us is not our security. Our security could be even in a flimsy tent, as long as it's Hashem protecting us. Because we know the sukkah also represents the Anane Akave, right? Those clouds of glory that Hashem surrounded us even in the desert. So we see a very fascinating thing, that sukkahs also represents the concept, in a simple word, of emunah, faith. The concept that everything we have comes from Hashem. All the brachas, all the good, everything comes from Hashem, and we have to constantly remind ourselves to have faith and restore that faith in Hashem. Chanukah is the same thing. Chanukah is a time that you light that candle at the darkest, you know, moments in Golos, as we say happened in Golos, the time when it is getting dark. The time when it is, or actually dark already, right? That's when the Hanukkah candles are lit. The idea being that we have to restore the emunah, restore the faith, that despite whatever it looks like, whatever darkness there is, we know we are not reliant upon what it looks like. We're reliant exclusively on Hashem. That's what Hanukkah is about. But it's deeper than that. And that's what it really explains. I know we don't have that much time, so I just... Very quickly, it's such a beautiful idea. What is Chanukah? So one thing, it's emunah, and emunah meaning shifting from our trusting, our security in the material, in the what we, you know, what it looks like, you know, so to speak. In the, you know, we say, okay, we have $1 million in the bank now, we don't have to worry. We forget about that. We don't worry. We don't worry because we have emunah in Hashem, not because, and we know that every single thing we have is only because Hashem gave it to us, and He can take it away, He can give it to us, right? It's up to Him. So all we do is we restore, we so to speak, refocus, and we reprioritize, and we realize that we have to restore that emunah. But even deeper, what is Chanukah and Sukkot? 8 days. What does 8 days represent? So you know in Torah we have the concept of 6 days of the week, the seventh day is Shabbos. Seven is a holy number, it's Shabbos. But nevertheless, we say that seven is a holy number within, so to speak, the way Hashem created the order of the world. Not necessarily even the natural order. It can even be higher than nature, but it's still within the order of how Hashem created the world. Whereas when we say the number eight, that's going beyond the order of the world, right? There's no eight at all. There's no 8 days of the week. Eight is a number beyond. That's why we say that Mashiach's harp will have 8 strings, right? It's 8. This is Chanukah and this is Sukkot. What does that mean? And it's a very beautiful idea. This is the concept even more than just, I mean, emunah is amazing, but how does emunah translate practically? We say the concept of Mesiras Nefesh. I think more than ever now, we are witness to people who have absolute Mesiras Nefesh on a day-to-day basis. What does this mean? I mean, we can just see the soldiers who literally are putting their life on the line. Every moment, they're ready to do it. It makes no sense. It's not a logical thing. It goes against the grain of what a human being should be doing. And yet they have that ability. And we are all asked now. It's not just, you know, we can say for them, we all have to have Mesiras Nefesh. We have to go beyond what we think we're capable of. We do. We have to do more. We have to hold ourselves to a higher expectation in everything and do more. More than what we can do. And sometimes it sounds, I know, I'm not comparing, because real Mesiras Nefesh that they have, I mean, it's unbelievable. And this is like small things, but nevertheless for us even, sometimes, you know, what we might say, we might excuse ourselves from reacting a certain way in certain situations. Now we shouldn't excuse ourselves. No, we have to hold ourselves to a higher standard. We have to have Mesiras Nefesh. What does it do if you have Mesiras Nefesh? You take, and this is very much connected, I'll conclude with this, with the Sukkot formula, because on Sukkot, what did they have? They had 7 plus 1. That's what it was, right? The 8th day was an exclusive day. What happens is that even though on those 7 days of Sukkot, you go down every day, less and less, the number goes less, that represents making the materialism less, the world, so to speak, how you view the physical world, that's what it represents, that you go less, right? So you decrease. But then you take the one, which is the connection to Hashem, and you insert that into the equation. And you know what that does? That says that those physical, material things, although on their own, we have to minimize them. But when we add the one, we can use even those things for Hashem. And that's what we've done. Remember, that's what they did. They brought them on the Mizbeach. So in other words, what this means is the darkness, as we said, it's getting dark, right? That's when you light the Chanukah candles. Chanukah has the ability to, even in the darkest of times, and it's so easy to use these words, and it's so hard when we're living it. And again, there's darkness on a global scale. There's darkness for the Jewish people. There's darkness for individuals, each and every one of us in our own individual life. There are real, real challenges. What Chanukah tells us is that we can take the little candle, and the Rebbe says beautifully in the Maamar, he says, it's one small candle, it's a little oil, it's insignificant, and what we can think is, what's it going to do? It's going to do nothing. It's not going to make any difference. It's not going to change the situation. Don't underestimate, don't undervalue it. That one little candle lights up and brings light. Slowly but surely, we brighten the darkness, and we will. We need Hashem to complete the job, big time. And that's what we're waiting for. So whether we go 8 to 1, 1 to 8, it doesn't matter which way we go. The idea is that it's corresponding to the concept that we decrease in the negativity, we decrease in the darkness, and we increase in the light. And we bring that light into it, and what ends up happening is that we have at the end, the total number was 70, we said, right? That's what happened. Which means that as a Jew, we have the ability to bring light even into the nations of the world, whether it be physically the nations, you know, as we say, and even the nations, so to speak, what they represent sometimes inside of us. Sometimes it might be all the things that are pulling us in the wrong directions, but we can elevate it and we can use it all to serve Hashem. And this is the idea that the darkness itself becomes light. That's what Mashiach is all about. The actual taking of the godliness being revealed in the world, the way we see the world, so to speak, as a world, not destroying the world, keeping the world intact, but showing how the world is really being created constantly by Hashem, and how the force and the energy is really all godliness, and really it is all goodness. So this is the power of Chanukah, the power of Sukkot, and this is what we have to work on now. Now we're Rosh Chodesh Kislev. This is our job. It's a hard job, but we have to know we can do it, and the Torah gives us the strength. So Hashem should help that really this year we should have a Chanukah in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, Emirtz Hashem, it should be lit up for every single Jew, in every single Jew's life, in the whole world. It should be only goodness and only light and only clarity. Emirtz Hashem. Emirtz Hashem.